Hi, my name's Ryan Atkin, and I am a senior manager for London North Eastern Railway, and I'm also a professional football referee in the English leagues, and I'm just about coping.
I'm Simon Blake, and this is Just About Coping. This is a fifth episode, 5 of 8, so we're over halfway through, and I hope you're enjoying the conversations as much as I am. Today's guest is Ryan Atkin. By day, he's a senior manager for LNER Railways. And at night and at the weekends, he's a professional football referee in the English leagues. We talked about the role of sport in well-being. We talked about his experiences as coming out as a gay man in a sport where there are currently no other openly gay people. And related to that, bringing your whole self to work. We covered a bit about Christmas and Auld Lang Syne as well. So our conversation was really wide-ranging, and I really hope you enjoy it. Let's start by talking a little bit about your experience of football. How, you know, given that there's so much focus on physical well-being, you know, is the same tension on mental well-being of athletes and referees?
Yeah, there is. A lot of the professional clubs have their own psychologists and their own departments that deal with player welfare. Within the Professional Game of Match Officials, the PGMOL, we've just actually linked up with Calm ourselves. And we also have a number of sports psychologists that we can tap into. And they do a lot of work, especially at the training seminars, around mental health and some of the signs around sort of nutrition and fitness that can affect mental health. And especially being a referee, you know, we get a lot of stick sometimes on the pitch. And sometimes that you can take that home, especially if you see yourself in the press and it's very negative on a, so that can affect you.
And a bit like any job, isn't it, really, that any stress, especially if it feels unfair and you know, directed badly, can feel stressful, can feel angst raising. So in terms of yourself, how do you deal with that if it feels like you've had abuse or unfair remarks targeted at you?
It's quite difficult to try and manage it. You tend to walk off a football field and just remember that you're in a uniform, and actually it's not directed to you personally. Social media, unfortunately, is one of those things that things are no longer just said. They linger because they're in text, they're on a screen, and so you can't just delete them out of your brain. For me, I try and de-stress. A bottle of red wine sometimes helps, probably not the best solution. But talking to friends, typically talking to other referees, trying to understand what caused that abuse potentially, or the negativity, trying to improve yourself from that aspect. But it is the hardest thing. You've got to park the decision that you made, whether it be positive or negative, and you've got to move on. And it's just something that you learn over time, that once you've done your game, you reflect, you review, you look to see if you can change anything and improve anything. But ultimately, you've got to move on because you've got a game in 2 days' time. And if it's still lingering, what it does make you do is make more mistakes.
Yeah. You talked about social media, and that's something which people will often talk about. Does that feels like it amplifies, and you think you use the word linger? Say a bit more about that.
Yeah, I think it amplifies because it's a bit like what children used to say, that words will never hurt me. We've gone past that now because actually it's written down, it's on the screen, it's available 24 hours a day. It can be shared instantly with lots of other people. Whereas beforehand, if we were having a conversation in a room, that is a conversation between two people, and you can sort of, you can get over it. Whereas when it's on social media, it's there for all to see. Other people want to comment. And I think we've seen a lot recently of some professional sporting people or celebrities where their social media has become a negative impact on their life. You know, somebody that's always having amazing days, amazing holidays, and I think that has a detrimental impact. And people then start to falsely project that everything's great in their life. And they're very clever in how they portray themselves. And we know pictures can be taken at certain angles and sort of shown to be this wonderful lifestyle. And I think other people then look up to that and think, right, why am I not having that? And it can have a detrimental impact on other people.
Yeah. And I was just thinking, when you're talking about
football and the impact of, you know, people directing abuse at you. We obviously see still racism in football, sadly, and homophobia and other bits. And just, can you talk to us a bit about the impact of that on players, as you understand it, or on supporters, actually? Because, of course, we often think about the players, but there is also the wider football community around those who support those on the alternative teams.
Yeah, I think sport, unfortunately, and I say sport, predominantly football, is in very troubled times. I think there's been an undercurrent in society of racism that hasn't come to bear fruit as such. And I think only now that we're seeing from the media and from games, if people have watched them, actually it's a deep-rooted problems within football. And I think it does impact on people because it makes you make decisions as to whether you want to attend football or not. It makes you think, are you good enough to play? Are you good enough to referee because of your skin colour or your religion or your sexuality? And I think clearly football needs to do more. It is trying. I think there's a big battle there around sort of moral implications, but also actually a business implication. And they're trying to weigh up how do they tackle this subject in a fair but robust way. It's not going to be solved overnight, but I do think they need to do more, and I think their sanctions need to be more impactful and make change within clubs, drive change within leagues. Because if you don't get that, what you will start doing is you will start to see supporters drop away, people that don't necessarily represent what is shown on the field of play. The one good thing about football currently is if you look at the sort of BAME aspect of football, actually it's very diverse, and that's not always reflected in the stands. And so football's got to ask itself, well, why is that? Why doesn't the audience represent what you've got on the pitch? But it clearly has a mental impact when you read articles from players from England and the decision-making process of, as to whether they walk off the field of play when they're, you know, when they're being abused or by racist comments. And that must linger for a long, long time, because they're not being judged on their football skills, they're being judged on the colour of their skin. And I think that will have a massive impact on someone's personal performance.
Yeah. And obviously you are currently the only out gay person in professional football. And you know, whilst there have been, you know, speculation about others, you're currently, you know, the person flying the flag. That must have been a challenging decision. Well, no, tell us a bit more about that. I'm not going to say it must have been a challenging decision. I'll let you say whether it was or not.
Yeah, ultimately, I think when you open yourself up to criticism, or you open your life up, it allows people to comment. And this is where we talk about social media. If I was to tell a couple of friends, okay, they may tell a couple of people who tell a couple of people. Whereas when you do it in an era where there is social media around, that news travels all across the world. My main reason for doing it was a couple of seasons back when I was demoted in football. I wasn't enjoying football. I wasn't enjoying my personal life. I contemplated whether my personal life hampered my football, or whether football was hampering my personal life. I'd often like to spend time with my friends, especially on a weekend, but actually my weekends were predominantly taken up with football. And so my on-field performance wasn't great, and I got fairly demoted. And sort of I then had to decide whether I wanted to continue in football or not, and I decided I did. And so from that, I sort of had to sort of dig deep. I had to accept what I was willing to sacrifice and what I wasn't willing to sacrifice, and try and have a fair balance. Worked really hard, got promoted back to the level I was after two seasons. And then when that happened, an opportunity arose through John Holmes at Sky Sports around telling your story. And so I approached John and said, look, a referee in semi-professional football. I'm a fourth official in professional football at the time. And I just happened to be gay. And actually, I've seen the work that Rainbow Laces is doing through Stonewall. And I think it needs a voice. And I don't want to be going back in the closet. I want to be able to be my whole self. I want to be authentic. And me and John sat down, and we penned article, which took a couple of months. We involved lots of different bodies in that. And then the article went live in 10th of August, 2017. And the rest is history, really. But what it has seen, and I've seen, is that I'm a different person on the field of play. I take my whole self into a game. I'm not afraid or shy anymore of being who I want to be on the field of play. My relationship with footballers has improved as far as management. And I can accept myself in football. And what I've seen of that is my own performance improve. Mm-hmm. And then as of the end of last season, I got promoted to where I am now, which is in the professional leagues. So there's a direct correlation there with being authentic and being yourself. And that comes from the sort of mental stability that you have yourself, the physical stability, and having that fair balance. Mm. And that was where I didn't want to get back to. I didn't want to be in that dark place of not enjoying football because I felt I couldn't be who I was outside of football. And that impact of lying to family and friends, living a double life in some ways, not remembering what you've told person sort of 2 months ago, to then see them again at football and then have to think, oh, what did I say and what can I say? Often I would change where I was going on a Saturday night to, okay, what's near Soho? Because that would be classed as gay. I would say, I'm going to Covent Garden or I'm going to Chelsea. And it's remembering those lies that really impact on you. And once you start building on top of that, it gets really difficult to sort of unravel it and unpick it.
Yeah. And you talked about digging deep. And I know that, you know, when people do things for the first time, or, you know, or the 100th person that's done it, whatever it is, if something feels big to you, that mental capacity to develop the confidence to stand forward, you know, what would you learn from that? If you were either, you know, talking to somebody else who was saying, I want to be brave enough to make those decisions, what did you learn from your experience of doing that?
I think resilience is one of the key elements there. And one of the things that I found helpful was to write down the positives, the neutrals and the negatives, and actually look at it on paper and move things about. Because you can put it in your head and you can think about it and where you're going to put it. But if you can't see it, as in visualize it, I found that things would move, because actually I was too afraid, or I was nervous, or I didn't have that resilience. Whereas when I wrote it down and I looked at the positives and negatives and the neutrals, what I found is actually there was more positives in coming out and being who I wanted to be, but also having a good, strong support network. And that support network can be a friend, and bounce things off people. And that's what I found the most useful. And I think everybody's got that inner strength to do that. It just needs nurturing. And I think friends, family can be a very good way of nurturing. And once you're comfortable or you're happy in your own personal life, that's the rock that you need. If you're not happy in your personal life and you make a decision to do something which you find to be quite stressful, or it's going to be a big occasion, if you're already wobbling because of personal matters, or you haven't accepted things, then ultimately things could topple. Mm. So for me, it was really important to have a strong basis and then build on top of that, a bit like building blocks, really.
Yeah. And you talked recently, there was the speculation, wasn't there, that another footballer was going to come out as gay. And I think, and there was quite a lot of anger from some when the person, didn't come out. I guess just when, now you're on the other side, yeah, be interested in your thoughts about how to help people in whatever circumstances, in whatever closet, whether that's sexuality, whether that's wanting to move countries, or whatever it is, what you would be saying to people who are just trying to take that first step to even write down the pros and the cons?
Ooh, difficult question. I think you've got to want to do it for yourself, ultimately. And you've got to remember what the end goal is. Some things will happen overnight and some things will take a lot longer to come into fruition. And I think for me, the key strap line that I've always said to people is that everything will be okay in the end, and it will be. And ultimately, if the end goal isn't in reach at the moment, it will be. I think some people want quick fixes, and I think some people are quite happy to take the journey that they lead. But I think it's crucially important to do your own research. What does it mean to you? You know, what is the benefits of doing what you're doing? If I look at people that could be LGBT within the professional game, I think there are a lot of pros and there are a lot of cons, and that's both from the individual's point of view, but from the organisation's point of view. There's this big stigma around players who come out would be homophobic, be abused at grounds. I personally don't believe that. I think a big impact in a footballer deciding whether they want to identify as LGBT or whether they want to publicly come out and announce what religion they are is when a footballer has their career in the United Kingdom, when they probably get to mid-20s, early 30s, other opportunities potentially come up, whether that be in America in the MLS or whether it be in the Middle East or in Asia. Now, as we know, we're quite lucky here in the Western continents where LGBT, race, religion, you know, we're moving in the right direction as far as acceptance and diversity and inclusion, where some other countries are nowhere near where we are. So ultimately, by that person declaring who they are could limit the potential for future moves. And what we've got to remember is footballers are their legs, you know, their skill is their commodity. That is their business. Mm. And that's what they rely on for their income, for their family. So there's a lot of decisions there for people to decide where they want to go in their life. And I think the second thing is it's very daunting to be the first at something. And unfortunately, we had the incident with Justin Fashanu, who obviously was BAME, and then he came out as gay, and then unfortunately committed suicide. And as it was a snowball effect, really. When you read back through some of the things that happened to him, you could just see, and I hope now that actually there would be support structures in place for somebody who decided that they wanted to come out within the game.
You just used the term committed suicide, and more recently people are now have stopped using the term committed suicide because it's not a criminal act, and using the term died by suicide. Were you aware that that change was taking place?
I've never been picked up, even on Sky. We've said he committed suicide.
Yeah,
and I didn't realise it. That's a prime example, though, isn't it, of how even within my own business, I will probably take that back to LNER now and say, actually, we cannot no longer be saying we've had. Typically, we will say someone's had a fatality. We think it's a slightly softer word to use, but that's really interesting. Something that I can take back to the railways.
Yeah, and of course the issue around the committee is stigmatizing, and equally, some people will think saying a fatality actually is not. There can be lots of reasons that there are fatalities on the track, suicide being one of those. So that whole sense around language. Mm. Reinforcing stigma or bringing issues into the open. And obviously one of the language is really important around stigma, but also role models. And one of the things which has happened recently in football is that some people are coming out and saying, yeah, I experience mental health problems or mental illness. Has that made an impact in the football community that you've seen?
Yeah, most definitely. Players don't often come forward and disclose personal information. One of the things I always talk about when we talk about LGBT is that why would somebody come out who is LGBT when we don't know anything about footballers? So for people to start sharing intimate facts about mental health is really, really positive. And what that does is it allows younger people to identify with their role models in a more natural and human way, because you know, they are under a lot of pressure. Footballers are, you know. And it's not just the aspect of playing the game. It's not just the aspect of training. But actually, there's a lot of things that come with being a footballer. You've got the social media interaction. You've got the pressure sometimes of being a role model and being looked up to by, you know, sometimes millions of people worldwide because of your skill. If you're not playing that well at the time, you know, what you can see is that positivity from fans turn into negativity. Some of the aspects around their own financial positions, about how they handle money and how that impacts on their family relations and friends. So it's really positive to see that footballers are publicly coming out and saying that they have suffered or are suffering. And some of the things that they've done to try and resolve that within their lives, or some of the work that they've done with charities to try and look at how they can improve sort of that mental stability for them.
And interestingly, as you were talking then, I was just thinking, I wonder if most people listening to this will be falling into that age-old trap of thinking about footballers and thinking about men. And, you know, of course, we've seen much more public profiling of women's football and women's sport more generally in recent times. I'd just be interested, has that sort of... has that shifted any of the dynamics in the willingness to talk about mental health or emotions or feelings? If we were to stereotype, of course, say, you know, that men often don't and women find it easier to do so. Do you think that has or might shift some of the dynamics around mental health and football?
Yeah, I think there is a direct correlation there. The only statistic that I can sort of think about is that there are a lot more openly LGBT players playing in women's football. And that's not something to be sneered at. Actually, that's something to say, well, why is it different? Why is it more acceptable within the women's game? You know, we've got the Women's Super League now within the United Kingdom, which is, you know, the following of that has been astronomical. We've had the Women's World Cup, which, you know, for seasons before, years before, wasn't followed. And this year, you know, the sort of the hype around the women's game. So I think it will start to open doors. I think it will start to break down barriers. And both leagues will start to leak into each other and they'll learn things from each other. And I think that's one of the most important things, how the women's game or how the men's game can learn from each other. And if they take that, then hopefully we'll see some improvements.
Yeah. You talked earlier about that principle, I guess, of taking your whole self to work and thinking about your day job. Do you think that sort of, do you, from your experience as a senior manager, still see that principle of people flourishing as they're able to be their whole selves at work, whatever that whole self is?
Most definitely. I think to have a diverse workforce allows for creative thinking, and the fact that people can bring them their whole selves to work. You know, when you've got issues or when you've got problem solving, actually having a diverse workforce will ultimately throw up different solutions rather than a solution that typically the workforce has gone down. So ultimately, yes, it is important to have diversity. Yes, it is important to be yourself. And what that also does is it allows for conversation to start. Typically, you go to a lot of work events and you will see similar people huddled together at conferences or if there's a social event. And I always wonder why people who are different, and we're all different from each other, don't seek out difference, because for me, it's the only way to grow your mind. It's the only way to grow yourself. I love to travel, and I think it's something that allows me to grow, meet new cultures, meet new people, embrace difference, understand difference. I think we're very lucky, again, you know, in the United Kingdom. We're massively ahead in technology. Typically, people's standard of living is very good, but we often forget about other areas of the globe that haven't got those resources. And I always question why people don't seek out to enrich their lives by seeing something slightly different and having a different perspective on aspects of the world, really, and their life. And I think it does put your life into perspective when you get to meet different people, because if you don't, you're always going to be on that same train track, on the same line throughout your whole life, and you'll never sort of diverge off it. And that's a great shame.
Is that LNER train track?
Yeah, could be.
You talked earlier about hope. I don't think you used the word hope, but you, as you were talking, thinking about the future and your hope for the future is a really key bit. So I want to just sort of talk, if you were to think about mental health, about supporting people's well-being, about different workplaces with your sort of straddled across that sort of more office based and the football field, what would you hope, if you were to think about well-being, mental health in the next 3 to 5 years in different workplaces, what would you hope?
I think it's for companies to understand and truly understand some of the root causes of mental health. A lot of the time, workplaces are not accommodating to individuals. And I think that is one of the key elements for me that can be a big cause of mental health. Everybody has their own personal lives. They have a lot of things going on. And it's only now that we're seeing workplaces really support flexible working, working from home, working from a different location. Whereas typically in Britain, especially, it's been very much, if you're not in the office, where are you? What are you doing? And I think that causes issues in itself. So for me, it's businesses looking at the root causes of mental health and identifying in their own structures or within their own sectors, what causes that? Because if you don't get to the root cause, you're never going to understand the underlying causes and you're never actually going to deal with it. So, but the hope for me in the next couple of years would be for businesses to link up with charities, accept that you don't know what you don't know, and actually talk to the experts and listen to the advice that is being given. So if you're asking for charities or organisations to come in and look at how well you manage mental health, to actually really take on the feedback and make fundamental changes rather than doing it to tick a box. And that would be my hope within the next couple of years for that.
Fantastic. And the other bit, which I'd just be really interested, that obviously there were times when it was... that journey was difficult from sitting down with John Holmes, and you said you got support from families and friends. And we talk a lot here at MHFA England about the importance of self-care. And some people know, understand and apply the principles and the practices. But essentially, how do you look after yourself, replenish yourself, give your brain a rest, those sorts of things. What would you do in order to keep yourself well? And were there any extra things that you would do in difficult times to sort of really try and bolster yourself and to look after yourself?
One of the things I like to do is to travel. And I think people having something to look forward to is a massive stimulus. And it is for me personally. So I love to travel. And so for me, already thinking about next year, what holidays am I going to look to book? Where am I going to go with friends? And for me, that is a massive stimuli for myself to think, actually, to break the year into blocks. For me, Christmas is coming. I know for a lot of people, Christmas is not a good time for them. For me, my birthday's 5 days before Christmas. And so Christmas has always been very special for me. The whole of December, I love Christmas. Absolutely love it. And there's elements of the calendar year that I actually really enjoy. So I try to map my year out around that, and there are going to be lows. There's going to be lows around personal welfare issues, if it's a loss of a family member, loss of a friend, relationship breakups, whether it be stress within work because of workload, and trying to manage not only work within LNER but also on the football pitch, my own personal performance within football. We strive to do our best in a game of football, but naturally, making approximately, I think it's something like 250 to 280 decisions in a game, you're going to get some wrong. You just hope it's not the big decisions. But sometimes you can have a really bad run of luck, and you don't want that. So you've got to look at how you are as a person. But for me, the key element is I like to plan. I like to things to look forward to. I like to talk to friends. I like to spend time with friends. Socializing for me is really important. And I think when you listen to friends, and this is good friends, you work out that actually some of your issues are not dissimilar to others. They may be slightly different in the approach or the problem, but fundamentally they're the same. And I think listening to your close friends is really important for me.
Mm, absolutely. A couple of people have, including Ranj, who you know, talked about kindset. So, you know, we need to shift our mindset into a place of kindset and really try to carry that principle of kindness into our everyday lives if we're going to be able to really, really foster each other's well-being and that sense of collective well-being. So just be interested in, you know, we don't often talk about kindness. Be interested in your take on what it means, but how could we take that into the rest of our day-to-day lives to improve well-being?
I think we all have kindness within us, but I don't always think it's at the forefront of everybody's day-to-day thinking process. And so for me, if everybody just gave that extra 1%, actually the world would be a better place. And I know Ranj does speak about, Dr. Ranj, I should say, does speak about kindness, and he speaks about it in a very positive manner. And he is right, you know, for him working in a very stressful environment, working within the NHS, he must see a lot of different scenarios taking place. But for me, kindness ultimately has got to be something that you don't learn. When you're born with kindness, and it's not something that people can use an excuse to say that they never knew about it. So for me, it's unearthing that and putting it to the forefront sometimes of our minds. And if everybody can apply that little bit of kindness, surely the world would be a lot better place for it.
It certainly would, in my opinion. So on that note, I'm going to ask you one last question.
Okay.
As we are fast approaching the Christmas season, and you will inevitably at some point be doing a bit of dancing. So what would be your favourite song to see in the new year, and why?
Ooh, that's difficult. That is really difficult.
It doesn't have to be true. You can just, yeah, think hard.
I always think, whenever I think, if I think about the last couple of years for New Year's, I've certainly changed what I've done. So when I was slightly younger, I would have been in a club or I'd have been at a party with a couple of friends, and would have seen New Year's in. And then the last couple of years, I've actually done it either at a house party or close friends and family. And actually, it's been better that actually it's just been close friends, close family. And I like the song Auld Lang Syne. You know, for me, I think it's a great song if you listen to the lyrics and everybody know what it's about. And you sort of, it's that song that you sing and, you know, they play it on the telly and Big Ben chimes, you know, if you're in London. And you sort of, if you want to, you can delete all the negativity that's taken place in the past year. And it's, and you've got a new year, you've got a new map to sort of look at, you've got a new ship to sail course. And if you can think like that, then ultimately that year could potentially be better. So yeah, I like Auld Lang Syne for me.
Excellent. That's not the answer that I thought. You thought you would give me something poppy, but you know,
it's... Oh, well, no. I mean, if it is poppy, I mean, it could be something like a little bit of Elton John. Excellent. I do like a bit of Elton.
Excellent. So, Rocket Man. Brilliant.
Yeah.
Ryan, thanks very much for talking to me.
No, thank you very much for having me.
Thank you for listening. I hope you enjoyed the conversation. I was struck listening to Ryan about the importance of courage, the importance of authenticity and being true to yourself as an absolute fundamental pillar for well-being. Continue to be delighted by the number of people that are listening to the podcast, that are subscribing to us and leaving us reviews. So just another shout out, this review from Twitter from Debbie Menham. Thank you for this. Having spent the last 18 months just about coping after the sudden unexpected loss of my lovely mum, this resonated with me. Happy to say I can see that light at the end of the tunnel now and can quieten the sad thoughts a bit. I hope you enjoyed our conversation. I'm Simon Blake. Thanks for coping with us.